Tuesday night, August the 21st, 1979. My time flies just a month from today, and we'll be having our autumnal equinox. And I just heard from a fellow in Australia, and he says spring is springing over there, and the blossoms are starting to come out. So it goes. Well, we start here tonight with Genesis 29. We find here in the last of 28 that Jacob has made a little promise to God. And he's telling God, if he will do so-and-so, then he will do so-and-so. I don't know whether God paid very much attention to that or not, because we don't bargain with God, after all. He's the one that sets all the rules and gives the orders, you know. And I don't like the attitude of Jacob very well there. I think he's still the grasping heel snatcher. But he says in verse 20 to 22, chapter 28, and he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me, and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat, and raiment to put on, so that I may come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone, which I have set for a pillar, shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. Notice he's using the name of God in the third person. In verses 20 and 21. And part of 22, and this stone which I set up for a pillar shall be God's house. Third person. And then he goes into the second person. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. I wouldn't like for somebody to be bargaining with me like that, I don't believe. Well, we go on, chapter 29, because Jacob has a long time to go yet till he really knuckles down and gets out of his own ideas and what he wants to do. And will pay some attention to what God wants him to do. Then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. Now don't let that throw you. He was going almost directly north. These are called the east. He's going up into Syria, north of Damascus. Damascus was in Syria. And he's going up to between the Tigris-Euphrates River up there at Haran, where Abraham had stayed for 25 years and left some of his family there. So he's going back to the family he came from. And he looked, and behold, a well in the field. And lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A great stone was upon the well's mouth. So here's the scene he comes to. A well, a great stone covering it, and three flocks of sheep lying near. And there must have been some men there because there were three flocks of sheep there. And so in verse 4, Jacob says brethren instead of sheep. He's talking to brethren instead of sheep. And Jacob said unto them, my brethren, whence be ye? And they said, of Haran are we. That's the very place he was looking for. And he said unto them, know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. And Jacob's having good luck, isn't he? Find him right old. And he said unto them, is he well? And they said, he is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep. Now, Laban must have been a poor man if his younger daughter had to look after the sheep. He didn't have any herdsmen. Remember, his younger daughter. Leah, I don't suppose, was able to. She was rather frail, and she also had weak eyes. So the older daughter wasn't looking after the sheep. And he said, "Lo, it is yet high day, neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep, and go and feed them." And they said, "We cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, and until they roll the stone from the well's mouth, then we water the sheep." And while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. Now we get the scene. He's talking with these men who have three flocks of sheep. While he's talking with them, Rachel comes with her flock of sheep, or her father's flock of sheep, so that makes four flocks now. The well is still covered. All right, verse 10. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled a stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his brother's mother, his mother's brother. Well, he didn't wait for the shepherds to come and take the stone away and so on. When Rachel came up with his sheep, he just took the stone off and watered them. I don't know whether he is breaking the rules of etiquette there or not. It doesn't say so. Now, I don't imagine Rachel had been able to handle that stone. I imagine she had to wait for the other folks to take care of it. I wonder what they had a stone on the well for. Well, that's just a question that comes up, you know, and we wonder. Well, in the first place, they wouldn't want a sheep to fall into it, would they? They wouldn't want anybody to fall into it. And they wouldn't want any animals and snakes and stuff to crawl into it either. So a good idea to close it up when they weren't using it. All right, several reasons probably. An open well out in the field. I can remember back when I've used water from an open well. Had to sort the fish worms out of it. Surface water running into it. I can tell you this, we didn't drink it. We went to a neighbor and had a well to get water for that. Well, water was a very important commodity, I remember, in this land. And a well was valuable. And so it was lucky that Rachel, in keeping her father's flocks, had access to this well. Now you have to watch some of the relationships in here. The word brother can be used for a nephew, vice versa. And so just kind of watch, just like in some instances we have a son where it's a grandson. And Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And that was an Eastern greeting, so I guess that wasn't maybe too bad. I don't believe that in greetings in those times that they kissed each other on the lips. And Jacob told Rachel he was her father's brother. Was her father's, not her father's brother at all. It was her mother's brother's son. But you see here, you can use it for a relationship. And then he was Rebekah's son. Well, you see that. If he was her father's brother, he was Rebekah's son, well, then Rebekah and Isaac were brother and sister. Always stop and think when you're reading the scriptures. There are reasons for these things, and if you don't stop and think, you may miss some important truths. And she ran and told her father. Verse 13. And it came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, how they relationship is correct, that he ran to meet him. You know, these folks are behaving like little children, but I guess some adults do these things too. You know, little children, they don't walk, they run. Ever notice that? They can't seem to walk. Everywhere they go, even just across the room or something like that, they have to run. Of course, now we use this thing, this word very loosely in our English today. You know, my better half may tell me to run upstairs and get something. Well, I don't obey. I'm not running up the stairs anymore. Or you run down the cellar, you run down to the barn, and you run here and you run there. So you see, the word can't be taken too literally, can it? And probably it can't either. So he embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house, and he told Laban all these things. All right. So he got invited in. He's going to have a place to stay. Now, how long it took Jacob to travel up there, I wouldn't know. I would imagine that he had between 60 and 100 miles to travel. And if he was on foot, well, when you're walking on foot in a country like that, you're not going to make too many miles in a day. To make 30 or 35, they're doing pretty well. Of course, some fellows are doing a marathon or something, they make a 45 or 50. But that's a pretty good walk. And it's pretty hard for a man, unless he's a pretty good athlete, to keep that up that many hours. I was thinking of 10 hours at 3 miles an hour over a rough terrain. Now, it's not uncommon for a person to walk 4.5 miles an hour, but you've got to take a pretty good stride. And the question is how many hours he can keep it up. Well, that's just thinking about a little, because we find when we studied Abraham's journeys that he had several hundred miles, in fact over 1,000 miles he traveled from Ur of the Chaldees till he got clear down in Egypt. And that is a long, long journey. And I don't know whether he rode any that way or not, or whether he did it all on foot. He did have camels and so on, so maybe he rode a camel, but I don't know. I think I just about a lee walk. Well, verse 14. And Laban said to him, "Surely thou art my bone and my flesh." And he abode with him the space of a month. Now, these are some idiomatic expressions here. You'll notice in your notes that the space of a month is, in the Hebrew, is a month of days. A week of days would be 7 days, I suppose, and a month of days would be about 28 days, according to the calendars they used at that time, which went by moon time. So he stayed there for a while, and verse 15, Laban said unto Jacob, "Because art my brother." Jesus over his brother. "Shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught?" He must have gone out and helped with the chores. Seemed to be working. Well, that's one good thing about Jacob, that when he was visiting somewhere, he went and helped with the work. Not all do that. "Tell me, what shall thy wages be?" And Laban had 2 daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. Let's see here. The word Leah means weary, according to my notes. So I take it as she wasn't very spry, she wasn't very healthy. And the name of the younger was Rachel. And that's a U. Now, ordinarily you spell U, but Y-O-U. But this U is E-W-E. There we again have homonyms in English, and they're certainly unlike in their spelling. Interesting. One of those, in fact, had been so interesting as there has been a book written on English homonyms. Words that sound alike but spelled differently. As usual things, sometimes they sound alike and mean different things. Well, they're going to bargain on the wages now. I don't know whether Jacob belonged to the union or not. Or did they unionize the shepherds in those days? I don't know. Well, Rachel was beautiful and well favored. And Jacob loved Rachel, first one he met, and she was beautiful, and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Well, now I wonder how much I'd make her worth. That he's serving 7 years. Well, I see now, you get about $30,000 a year or something like that. Make her worth quite a little bit, wouldn't it? Well, now we laugh at that. But you know, maybe the wages he got that time were fulfilled the needs just as sufficiently as $30,000 a year now would. So you can't go by the figure. I know several years ago I started teaching school in this community and I got $44 a month. Well, that is sufficient then. But it wouldn't be now. It'll hardly pay my electric bill. But times change. And so when we read these things back in these days, why, just kind of keep in mind the situation, the way the times were. Well, I wonder what Laban says. I don't know whether they ever consulted Rachel or not. Does it say so? This is just particularly a bargaining between these two men. And Laban is going to sell his daughter for so-and-so. Well, that was rather a common transaction back in those days. So, and I don't know. It seems that marriages that were originated and fixed up by the parents lasted better than when the young folks who didn't have too much gumption sometimes did when they made their own decisions. So maybe it was a good deal with that. Well, Rachel and Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. So it's a bargain. Didn't sign any contract. Didn't have any witnesses that I know of. The reason I mention it is because something comes up later that makes me think of that. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Just like a few days. Well, now, I hear is one good point coming out in Jacob. We hardly find any evidence that he loved anybody else but himself up to this time. So maybe here's a step. I can remember when he had a popular song years ago, I Love Me. There's a lot of folks like that. Rather impossible folks. And Jacob said, and the Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, I may go in unto her. This is after 7 years. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. I have a wedding feast. And it came to pass in the evening, he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. In the dark, he didn't know which girl it was. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid, for a handmaid. And that was customary in the time. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And how disappointed Jacob must have been. And he said to Laban, what is this thou hast done unto me? Oh, the chickens are coming home to roost, finally. What had he done to his brother? And even deceived his father. And now, he's beginning to reap what he sowed. He'd been a pretty good cheat, but he met his match in Laban, didn't he? Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore hast thou beguiled me? What did you lie to me for? And Laban said, it must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Oh, he's going to go back to custom now. That's his excuse. Fulfill her wheat. And we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. All right, another 7 years, and I have the other one too. That's the bargain. And Jacob did so, and fulfilled her week, that is, Leah's. Week, was it? You know, people have a strange idea about this deal. That he worked 7 years and got Leah, and worked another 7 years and got Rachel. But it can't be so. For during that second 7 years, Joseph was born to Rachel. So at the end of the first 7 years, he not only got Leah, but he got Rachel also, and bargained with work another 7 years for her. Now you get it straight. Now Rachel had Joseph in that second 7 years. That was her firstborn. And Benjamin was her last. She only had two when she died when Benjamin was born. And so he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. And Laban gave to Rachel his daughter Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. So now each one has a handmaid, which actually makes Laban have 4 wives. Because under the law of Hammurabi, if a wife consented, why, he could have a handmaid for wife too. And we found the same thing in the case of Abraham and Sarah. And so Hagar, Sarah's handmaid, became wife to Abraham. Now remember, this is before the Mosaic Law, long before it. Verse 30, and he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 other years. So he here tells the story again, that he had Rachel to wife before he served the second 7 years. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, or loved less at least, I suppose she was sort of neglected, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, surely the Lord has looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. Oh, she knew that she was less loved than her sister, didn't she? Didn't have to tell her, maybe. So Reuben now is the firstborn. And being the firstborn, he is the one that should have carried on the tribal headship, the inheritance, and so on. But we find it was not Reuben. It was not from him the kings came, but from Judah. And we'll get to him after a while. It seems that Reuben and Simeon and possibly Levi did some things that made them forfeit their inheritance as the three elder sons. And so Levi, being the fourth, came in, or Judah, came in fourth, and so had the inheritance. I'm anticipating a little bit, but help you get these things straightened out. I don't think that they had trouble with keeping the names of these straight and who was the eldest and so on. I don't think they had any trouble with that. I don't think they even had to call the roll when they came to the table to eat, if they had a table. Even if it was a large family. verse 33, and conceived, that is, Leah conceived again, and bare a son, and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. I think that means hearing. Yes, hearing. So the Lord had heard. And she conceived again and bare a son and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons. Therefore was his name called Levi. So now you have Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. It was from Levi, however, that the priesthood came. Remember that. And Aaron was of the tribe of Levi. And Moses. And she conceived again and bare a son. She said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah and left bearing. So now you see that the kingly line from which David, Solomon came, was from Judah, a son of Leah, and not of Rachel, the beloved wife. Now God has purposes and works them out. Now chapter 30. We have time to go away on that. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. Naturally. Because in that time, and that word children is probably sons, because bearing sons for their husband was the ambition of the wife. The girls didn't count too much back in those days. And that has been one of the tragedies of the human race. But I won't go into that now. And she said unto Jacob, give me children, or else I die. Well, she's blaming Jacob. I guess she thinks that Jacob is God or something. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in God's stead? Who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? He got a little bit riled up when she went at him like that. And she said, behold, my maid Bilhah, going unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her. And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. And Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me, and hath also heard my voice, and hath given me a son. Therefore she called his name Dan. And I don't know, might just as well have been if they'd never had Dan. He doesn't have a very good reputation. The word means judge. Dan was the first of the tribes to introduce idolatry into Israel after they went into the land. And it is quite likely that out of the tribe of Dan will come the mother of the Antichrist. And in Genesis 49, where you have a prophecy concerning these 12 sons, Dan is a serpent, by the way. And when the tribes were in the wilderness and about the tabernacle, each of the tribes had an ensign, a banner. And on these were 12 signs of the zodiac. And it fell to Dan to have the serpent. However, they changed that to the eagle, the enemy of the serpent. And so the ensign of Dan was the serpent. Verse 7. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again, and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. And she called his name Naphtali, which means a troop, I believe. But when Leah saw she had left bearing, and she had had four sons by this time, she took Zilpah her maid and gave her Jacob to wife. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare a son, and Leah said, Gad is a troop. Now let's see here, Naphtali is a hind in the prophecy, forgot. My wrestling. Yes, that's right there. I wrestled with my sister. Naphtali is wrestling. And Gad is a troop. I heard somebody one time say that the women nowadays belong, all of them belong to the tribe of Gad. I suppose they think they're gadding about. I noticed the significance of names back in these times. All through the Bible, I noticed that names have a significance. Of course, nowadays we give a name just because it sounds nice to us, or it's one of our ancestors, or something like that, or some movie star, or whatnot, or after a president. And quite often when you see men's first names, you can tell just about under what administration they were born. Well, verse 12. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son, and Leah said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed. And she called his name Asher. Asher, that's, let's see here. I keep looking here, I forget some of these. Happy? Mm-hmm. Asher means happy. So call me blessed or happy. All right, now here, I notice that these all come in pairs all the way through. Two pairs to Leah to start with, and a pair for each of the handmaids. And then another pair. And finally, Rachel has a pair. We're getting a little ahead on that. Making six pairs then of sons born to Jacob. 12 sons. Now, verse 14, and Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest. Now, he's the eldest. Wait a minute. Reuben, yeah, he's the eldest. Went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field. Now, evidently, that's a little something like our ginseng we have now, because it's kind of in the shape of a man, a double root. And ginseng is right there. Haven't seen any ginseng growing wild for many, many a year. Used to see it once in a while. And she brought them unto his mother, Leah. And they were a good luck charm and a love potion and a little of everything back in those days. Had some medicinal properties, I guess. Then Rachel said to Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. And she said unto her, is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband, and wouldst thou take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. And Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him, and said, thou must come in unto me, for surely I have hired thee for thy my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. Doesn't make real too good reading, but these are family affairs, and they have a bearing on the story. We see how that these folks act in the family, just as they did in the family of Abraham and in the family of Isaac. And God hearkened unto Leah, and she conceived and bare Jacob the fifth son. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire, because I have given my maiden to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. Issachar. Now, his wages or something like that. However, he is an ass burdened with a burden in the prophecy in Genesis 49, Issachar. So he had a burden there. And Leah conceived again and bare Jacob the sixth son. And Leah said, God hath endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun. Zebulun. Dwelling or habitation. And it seems that when the land was divided for the inheritance among the tribes many years later, Zebulun was over by the seaside and he dipped his foot in the oil, I believe. In other words, the oil was found there. We could go into a lot more things like that, things that go along with this story. And after she bare a daughter, and called her name Dinah. Well, it says after she bare a daughter. There are some folks who think she was a twin daughter, or a twin girl to Zebulun. But I rather doubt it. Well, now all the time here, Rachel hasn't had a child, her own. And God remembered Rachel. And God hearkened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son. And said, God has taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph. And said, the Lord shall add to me another son. Joseph. The Hebrew is Yosef, Y-O-S-E-P-H. Means may he add. Now your notes also speak about the name of Jehovah and God in connection with these. You notice here that the Lord, that's Jehovah, she says, will add to me another son. Rather significant about that name being added to those, but I thought I wouldn't go into too much detail and get folks lost. We're just rather skimming over Genesis to get the main ideas of it so people can read it with a better understanding. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go into mine own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee. Now this is before the last one is born, Benjamin. Remember that Joseph never saw Benjamin until Benjamin came down to Egypt with his brothers, when Joseph was prime minister of Egypt. So Benjamin was born quite a little while later. Rachel may have been getting somewhat older, and she died in childbirth. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry. I just stay on. For I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. Your note says that that word experience means by divination. Now here's something that you'll have to sort of recognize. Although this Laban was related to Abraham, he was Abraham's brother's son, and though he came out of Ur of the Chaldees with Abraham, that is, his father did, nevertheless, we are told that Abraham's fathers were idolaters. As God appeared to Abraham and made promises to him and not to the rest of the family. So Abraham could not even be told what the land was that he should inherit until he got rid of the last one of his family, Lot. And Lot, you know, what his end, he went down to Sodom, mingled with the people down there, and led a sorry life. Now Laban had some gods. He knew about the God of Abraham, he knew about the God of Isaac, so on. But still he had some gods, and that's coming up into the story. Idols. Now, what I wanted to bring up here is because he said by experience here, and that really is a word meaning divination. Now, whether that is divination through the true God or some of his idol and spirit worship, I don't know. We do read that Joseph had the power of divination, and he had a cup by which he did it. That's anticipating in the story, too. There's a sort of a form of storytelling. Now, I don't know whether they had tea leaves in the cup or not. Some people, you know, talk about reading your fortune by tea leaves and all that sort of thing, all these superstitions that we have, which come from heathen idolatry. And Jacob says, appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. And he said unto them, thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me. For it was little, which thou hadest before I came. Now, he didn't have very much. Rachel taking care of his sheep. And is now increased unto a multitude. and the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now when shall I provide for mine own house also? It made Laban rich, but he didn't have very much for himself yet. And he said, what? He just worked for two women for 14 years, and that's all he got. And he said, what shall I give thee? And Jacob said, thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock. I will pass through all the flock today, removing thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, and it shall come for my hire before thy face. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, they shall be counted stolen with me. And Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. The bargain struck. I'll work for him some more. And he does work for him another 6 years, not quite seven. But that's getting ahead and telling you the end chapter, isn't it? I will have to quit here on this part of our lesson. Get ready for the second part. All right, now we're ready for our second half. Ready for, well, really ready for Revelation 21. But I don't think I'll go right immediately into it. Well, I've got a few things to say about this book now since we've gotten to this particular point. I'll open my book to it so I'll have it. It came pretty well toward the end of the chapter. There's only two more chapters on Revelation to look into. Now, if you're on the chart that I have, on Daniel 9, 24 and 25, we have the prophecies concerning end times. In fact, we have two prophecies in those two verses, two distinct prophecies, two distinct periods of time. And down through the ages, the commentators and theologians and so on have not noticed that. And it's only been really in recent years that some folks awakened up to the fact that here are two distinct prophecies and we can set some very exact dates from them. Now your verse 24 in Daniel 9 is concerning the second coming of Christ. Verse 25 is concerning the first coming of Christ. In other words, they're in the opposite order. Just as it is in Genesis 3:15, where the prophecy is, and both comings of Christ there. In his first coming, his heel will be bruised. In the second coming, the head of the serpent will be crushed. But they're put in the opposite order. Now, in verse 24, in Daniel 9, the prophecy says that 70 weeks are determined upon the people, thy people, and the holy city. Now, a lot of people leave the holy city out of it. They overlook it, just like they overlook a lot of important things in the Bible. But when you put the people and the city together, that gives you a time period. Now, it couldn't be while they were in Babylon, because they weren't in the holy city. So it couldn't be when the decree was given by Ahasuerus